Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, Lady Luck?
Bretzky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Today on The Grave Talks, Wisconsin's haunted theaters. Wisconsin is famous for many things. Beer, cheese, football, Great Lakes. What about ghosts? What about the spirits of generations gone by that still linger around this vast plot of northern land? Specifically, the theaters of Wisconsin. For more than 100 years, many towns and cities have held onto their historic theaters through good times and bad. Some have aged better than others, some have been repurposed, some still brimming with life. Afterlife. Today we talk with paranormal investigator Michael Brown and Todd Deering about Wisconsin's haunted theaters. We start with my personal friend Todd Deering. Todd, tell us how your fascination began with the paranormal.
Well, I think, and I might be wrong with this, but I think my story is probably a lot like a lot of people. You're young and you start seeing scary stuff in movies and TV shows and stuff like that. And all of a sudden you're like, wow, that's really cool. And then you spend your time not being able to sleep at night because you're so scared about it. But mine really started back. I think Amityville Horror was the first time that I went, wow, can this be real? I mean, you think about haunted houses and you think about ghosts and all that stuff growing up, but you see something like that and you see people investigating, and then you read the stories and you read the book and you go, this is crazy. So I think that was really where it started for me. So there was always an interest. Mm-hmm. But I think I didn't get into maybe in doing some investigating of my own until I realized that other people were doing it. So it took people like ghost hunters and ghost adventurers and people like that to come out of the woodwork, be on television, and make me realize, hey, this is something that I could actually get into. And not necessarily do it as a profession, but do it because I had an interest in it.
Did you ever have any experiences when you were a child, when you were watching Amityville Horror or reading the book, and discovering you had an interest in the topic that were paranormal for you personally beyond just, wow, that's really spooky, this material that I'm consuming?
You know, to the everyday person, like, did I see things move or did I hear voices and stuff like that? No. The weird stuff that always happened to me seemed to happen in my dreams. And so as a younger person, you disregard those. You say, well, that's just a dream, because you watch things like Amityville Horror, you watched other movies, et cetera. But the further you get into looking into paranormal and talking to people and learning that, listen, there's stuff going on us, going around us all the time that we just don't know anything about. We don't even realize it's there. Dreams and feelings and emotions and all that kind of stuff. So I can say that until I really started investigating and opened my mind and really started doing research of my own into paranormal and things of that nature, I never noticed anything that actually happened to me. I would have bet that my grandmother's house was haunted, but I didn't have any kind of proof to say that that was the case.
With the dreams that you had as a kid that were, you know, scary, terrifying, you know, that made you get up and go, what the hell was that? As an adult in all these years now, looking back on those experiences that you had, those dreams that you had, do you think anything that you were experiencing in those dreams was attributed truly to something paranormal, or was it just an imagination that was running wild with all the things that you were consuming?
People may think I'm odd, including your other guest on the show today. Tony, you might think I'm odd too. You actually know some of the dreams I had that I'm talking about. I think there may have been a link to something. I think there may have been a link to either another plane of existence or receiving feelings and emotions from other people. I remember one of the dreams I had, and I may have told you this story many years ago, Tony, was I had a dream that my grandfather died. And right after that, like literally weeks after I had that dream, he did pass away. Mm-hmm. And so my realization in the dream that he had passed away was not that grandfather had died, but there was an extra cross on the wall in my mother's bedroom where she kept the one from my grandmother's death. And I could never understand in the dream why there were two. And then weeks later, my grandfather dies. So that was the kind of realization to the that maybe there is something there. I'm not saying that there is. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what I necessarily believe in all that. But it does open your mind and make you think, listen, there's a lot of stuff we just don't understand.
There was, it seems, some sort of a connection there that there's too many things pointing to it to go, that seems almost more than just a coincidence. Right. I would say one of the, I like to share this story. It's probably one of the creepiest nights I can remember in my life. It was you and me going to, and maybe I've embellished it over the years. I don't know. So if I'm embellishing this, I've wanted to share this story on the air with you because I want to get your take on it and see what you remember. This right. was 20 some years ago. We were going, we had a difficulty finding a place that we were supposed to be DJing a wedding at. It was somewhere in Wisconsin that was at least an hour outside of where we lived. And we got out there. I believe we almost gave up trying to find it. This is pre-GPS. This is all that. And we were going in the middle of nowhere. Eventually, from what I remember, in the middle of the woods, I believe it was inside of a trailer park, isolated by itself. And then there was like this... this hall that was inside of the trailer park. And I remember going into this hall, and it had this weird... eerie feeling of almost being in a different place in time. And we got set up and we were playing the music, and I just remember the people feeling kind of off, and it felt very odd. The inside and you know, Wisconsin, a lot of halls and supper clubs, no matter what, will feel like it's 1962, no matter right. what, but it really truly felt like it was that place in time. And I remember going to the bar and asking for a soda, and I got like a bottle of Coke, and they didn't bottles of Coke were not around in 1998 as they are today. There was a point in time where that was all discontinued and everything was plastic or gone. And it was like that struck me as very strange. And I don't know. I look back on that night and I'm probably just projecting more than what was really there. But there's almost kind of a feeling of a time slip that night when we were there. But I remember on the way back too, you sharing some of those dreams with me. And we talked about Salem's Lot and all sorts of very creepy things. It was a lovely evening. I have very fond memories of it.
Yeah, my memories have not stuck with me over the years. But I do remember that night very, very well. And the feeling of getting there was either we're walking into a mass murder situation and we're just not going to come out of this, or we're going to be stuck back in 1965 and they'll find our lifeless body someplace in the cornfield. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's how it felt. It was very odd. I'm not alone in recalling this feeling, like there, not just because of the setting, but it did feel off. There was something very odd about that place.
Definitely.
Where was that? Do you know the town it was? I don't even
know. No, I don't, but you were exactly right. It was in like a trailer park and in the middle of nowhere, and there was a hall there. It's like all the trailer park people partied at this hall or something like that, you know?
It was unlike anything I've seen or come across since. It was just this little thing unto itself. Maybe it was a cult. I don't know.
I think you should write a story about it, though.
Yeah, it was very, very bizarre. Well, anyway, continuing on, Michael Brown and Todd Deering with us on today's episode. And Todd, obviously here a part of the Haunted State Theater of Shadows documentary available on Amazon Prime. Michael Brown, the creator and producer of it. Let's talk, Michael, about Theater of Shadows. We talked, obviously, about Haunted State on the last episode that you had joined us on, about the state of Wisconsin, its various haunted locations. And then you made the decision to focus solely on theaters for this second documentary. How did that decision come about?
Well, I just feel like every time you go into a theater, I mean, whether or not you believe in this stuff, you get a feeling. I mean, and the feeling's different for everyone. But for me, I always wondered, you know, what's actually going on here? It's like an eerie feeling. And there's a little bit of a debate between the four of us here in the Haunted State, the docuseries, the four of us that film, about empaths. And, you know, Anne and I are empaths, and Todd a little bit is, but then Angela isn't. And it's like feeling things, either from the past or from people that you're around. And every time I'd walk into a theater, I would get a feeling. So I just thought, visually, and as a filmmaker, that this would look amazing to go in and film and talk about the history, because most of these theaters are, you know, many generations old, and, you know, most people alive today did not know the stories of these theaters. And it's one of those things where I think, when we talk to people about it, especially, they get really excited, especially if they're from the Midwest or Wisconsin, or they have been to any of these locations. And I just thought it was a nice little niche of a story that just had to be told, and I wanted us to be the ones to tell it.
Growing up and knowing this state and all the different theaters that it holds, it seems almost every town, and this is true of many places of the country, they have their grand theaters, their theaters that were at one time playhouses, sometimes then converted into movie theaters, briefly being porn houses for short periods of time, and then whatever they may be today. Was there ever or is there a theater for you that you grew up around or that you look at as, this is one that I really want to investigate because it's always had a haunting element to it?
For me, it was the Pabst Theater and the Riverside Theater. Growing up in Milwaukee, you spend a lot of time at both of them. And just for me to be able to be in those buildings with nobody else in there, alone with their film crew, I mean, it was really actually special for me. But I would say, and actually I'm going to bring Todd in on this, Todd didn't get to go to the Pabst Theater, but the Riverside Theater for me, that was the really, really big one, because there's still huge shows at the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee. It's one of the, you know, the go-to venues when bands and comedians are coming through town. And I have to say, I think if we had spent any more time at that location without giving anything away, I think we could have been in trouble. Todd, what do you think?
I would think so. I mean, just the name of the theater tells you a little bit about it. Riverside, it literally is right next to the river. And because of that, there's a lot of water leakage and movement in the basement of that theater. And there's a lot of thought process when it comes to paranormal, that nature and water and all that kind of stuff can fuel things happening. And I think the night started off light, and then it got very heavy toward the end. And as Michael said, I think if we would have spent any more time there, it could have been a bad situation for all of us.
Yeah, there was a situation where I was with one of our former castmates, and we were up in the theater projector room, and we had been there maybe at this point, I'd say maybe 90 minutes, and we really hadn't had much happen. And I'm an investigator, but I'm also the director and producer of this, so I've got a lot of weight on my shoulders. And instead of me just focusing on what I'm supposed to be doing, sometimes I will start to stress out about everything. And I'm up there, and all of a sudden we have a voice yell, like growl at me, and I heard it. It was a disembodied growl. And from my previous experience, and I talked about that on the earlier episode with Tony, where I was at the First Ward Schoolhouse, where I had something follow me home, I learned that I immediately need to be aggressive and very verbally aggressive, and I was. And when I came downstairs, the girl who was there, I can't remember her name, Todd, but remember the girl from the Riverside Theater that was to kind of follow us around? She looked like she might have wet her pants. She was scared. Like, she had this look of terror on her face, and I was just like, oh, we get that all the time, you know? And I had to explain to her that it was okay, it, you know? But that moment, I think for me, is the one that really started the whole downward spiral of all the negative energy. We'll call it negative energy. It was temporary negative energy, but I definitely felt like that place, it was negative in the sense that it did not want us there. Like, whatever was there, and it was multiple entities, it was not just the one, they were not thrilled we were there.
Going into the Riverside, what were some of the things that you had heard or researched or rumors about the location? What was your impression before even setting foot in the door?
Yeah, I knew the Riverside Theater, and you kind of called it about the porn theater. There are multiple instances of that actually in the film. There was another location in Madison that was the same thing. But yeah, the story of the theater was a very sad one. I mean, it almost closed multiple times. And the city, actually members of the city, very wealthy members of the city, ended up saving it. But I know the folklore there, the big story that I heard going into there was there's a very level-headed guy named Jason that works there. He actually does not believe at all in the paranormal. And he would go there with his dog and like on the weekends to go do paperwork. And he walked in there with his dog and, you know, went in to go take care of his business. And on his way out, all of a sudden his dog had this reaction and they saw a full body apparition, and his dog immediately collapsed. The dog just went limp, and he had to physically pick his dog up because his dog was shaking. He had to physically pick his dog up, and he ran out of there. And this is someone who doesn't believe in the paranormal, and now they're having a paranormal experience, and they're telling everyone, hey, I had this thing happen to me. So, I mean, I had heard that story, I'm going to say 5 years ago, and he actually talks about that in the film. We actually interviewed Jason. He talks about his experience there with that. And there was another story of a gentleman who worked there who went and was throwing paper airplanes with his son. And he believed, and I don't know if this made the film because it was so long ago when I cut it, but the paper airplanes were flying back to him. And I mean, when you're on the second floor, the second balcony there, and it's not small by any means. I mean, that makes you want to say, okay, we definitely need to investigate this, because you've got some people who are not believing in the paranormal. They're not even in the genre of it. They're just minding their own business, living their daily life, and then they have these experiences. So just lots of stories of we'll call them tricksters. Mm-hmm. And I thought we were going to go in there and have some fun experiences, but I'd say I probably have filmed at maybe, and I might be over guessing here, but maybe 50 locations total in the years I've been doing this. And there are two for me that were kind of had a dark energy, you know, not very welcomed energy. And this was one of those places for me.
Yeah. And I would also just add that place was kind of cool too, only because not only did it seem like we had residual energy from all the shows and the entertainment that took place there and the people who worked there, but also intelligent energy too. So we were getting kind of the best of both worlds on that.
When you were talking to Jason and you said that he doesn't even believe in the paranormal, after having those experiences, does he have some sort of a logical reason that he tells himself as for what happened with the dog?
No, he doesn't.
Or does he now believe?
the shadow person is still seen to this day.
Okay.
And we, you know, basically it's kind of a rite of passage for everyone who works there. Like, hey, did you see it yet? Did you see it yet? And everyone that works there has had a experience, or many of them. So we were hoping the night we were there to capture this, which we didn't. And I mean, I can speak freely now. The venue was very nervous about bringing us in. I think everything is fine with them, obviously, but I felt like they were nervous because they've had, you know, so many people have had these experiences. They were very careful on how we presented the story. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I'm definitely sensitive to, because obviously I don't want to go and film somewhere and hurt their business. But sure. Ultimately, there is no question in my mind there is something there. No question at all. But I just think it's one of those situations where it just doesn't want to be bothered. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're, because of, out of respect, one of the main things that we put into all of our investigations, especially in the docuseries, is we make sure we're always respectful. We don't provoke. I mean, I may return some bad energy in kind if someone's being rude to me. That's not any different than real life. If someone's a jerk to me, I'll be a jerk back to them, and then I'm quick to apologize. I'll do that. But for the most part, just out of respect, I won't go back to the Riverside Theater, because it was very, they made it very clear that we do not, they did not want to communicate with us. They did not want us there, that we were bothering them. Is that how you felt, Todd?
Absolutely. And you say, like, whether it was a dark energy or whatever, I just think that it has its routine. That is the place that it resides, or that's the place some of the energy hangs out. And it really didn't want us messing around with it.
Yeah. And if you remember that night, do you remember how I was?
Oh, you were messed up.
I was messed up. Now, I had just gone to my grandma's funeral that day. So, I mean, there are a lot of emotions going, but I just kind of felt like my wheels were spinning, and I'm very high energy. That was Ann Benson. That was her first investigation. Now that she's the fourth member of the docuseries. So that was her very first time coming into this. And I mean, it was a shit show. I mean, it really was. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, and I just saw the look on her face, like, what did I get myself into here? You know? And we've come a long way since then, but I just, you know, every time I have gone by the theater, I've thought about those moments, but I have never actually physically gone inside the Riverside since then. I mean, I don't go to a lot of concerts anymore since I'm out of radio. but I would be interested to talk to the staff to hear, you know, what kind of experiences they've had since then.
Sure. With it feeling like it almost didn't want you there, this is obviously a matter of personal opinion here, but do you think an entity like this, specifically the one at the Riverside, is it one that didn't want you guys there specifically because you were investigating and seeking it out? Or is it one of those entities that doesn't want anyone there because it's its theater and it wants it back to itself?
Yeah, I would agree with the second account. I mean, I don't think it wants anyone there, because okay. The things that are happening to the staff even are not awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, no one's being hurt. No one's being, I mean, they're just being a little intimidated. Thing is, when you see what we call a full body apparition, we've referred to it as a shadow person, but technically that's inaccurate. I just was told by the expert, parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach, actually interviewed him yesterday, and he said you're not supposed to use the term shadow person, you're supposed to use full body apparition. So people see full body apparitions walking through there all the time. I mean, I don't know about you two, but if I see that, I'm going to be intimidated by that. I'm sure. Not going to see that as positive. Even if it's meant to be, I'm not going to see that as a positive thing. But this is not something that patrons experience. It's only the people who are there when it's empty, when it's full, when there's a show going on, when there's lots of activity, you know, with the show or whatever going on there, there's no problems. It's when the people are there alone, that's when this thing seems to happen. And it doesn't matter what time of day. It could be, you know, noon on a Sunday and stuff will happen.
It's interesting, a very interesting observation. It was one I've talked about on the show before, where you have entities that have seemed to follow that pattern of not many people around, they're seen, they're experienced. But it does make me wonder, is it just because they're that easier to see when there's less people around? It's much easier to sense a shadow person or a full-bodied apparition or entity or whatever it may be when there's not 500 other distractions around. It can make itself known that much more. And when there's hundreds of people in a venue or a shopping mall or wherever it may be, there's all those distractions, and it can blend in that much more with so many other people around.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. That's definitely what it is. There is a big rule we have when we film is we need a place to be empty, just mm-hmm. because of noise contamination. And I would say There are places, though, that we have gone to where that doesn't matter if there's people there, if there's not people there. I mean, if there's a lot of activity there, there's a lot of activity there. But I would put most of the experiences we had in that box where it does need to be a little bit more empty. And I definitely feel like it's a place that they think like, this is mine. This is not yours. You do not belong here. Get out of here. That's the vibe I got from being there.
Let's talk about another theater in Milwaukee that you had mentioned earlier. Another one for you that hits home, the Pabst Theater. What did you discover when investigating that historic location?
Yeah, the story on this is really amazing because it does tie into the first movie. We did film at the Pabst Brewery from the first movie, Whispers from History Past. So it was a real big treat for me to be able to kind of take the next step in the Pabst lore, if you will, because he was, like I said earlier, he was a modern day Bruce Wayne from Milwaukee. He paid for everything. He took care of the city. He had so much money, he didn't really know what to do with it. And the really cool story about the Pabst Theater, I mean, it did burn down and he was overseas and he sent two words in a telegram, or actually it was one word. I'm going to start that over. He sent a one-word telegram when it burned down, rebuild. And at that time, obviously, 1880s, early 1890s is when it went up. It took 9 months only for that to go up. And if you have seen the interior of that building, pretty amazing that with the technology they had back then, I mean, you'd be hard pressed to get it up in 9 months here. You know what I mean? With the stucco and all the designs on the inside. It was at the time, it was also, there were only four theaters that had air conditioning. And this was the fourth theater in the country that had air conditioning, and it involved a lot of ice on the roof and fans and everything, but it was state of the art and completely legendary venue. And just being in there, I mean, the giant chandelier that's in there is super legendary. And I definitely think of the three theaters, it was by far the most, well, is tied for most active. We went in there, we only filmed 3 hours, and we had, I want to say, 30 minutes of footage in the movie. It was just the three of us, though. Todd was not able to make that film session, but it was Ann Benson, myself, and Angela Olson, the producer. And I mean, we had flashlights being knocked off, like picked up and moved on camera. You see it happen. Lots of communication, lots of words, lots of flashlight activity, where we would command it to turn on and off on command. And I know a lot of people are skeptical about that, but think whatever you want. It's fine, but it happened. The one thing that really stuck out to me that was really crazy was when you're in a lot of these theaters, when it's dark, you still see like cracks of light coming through. This theater was dark. I mean, you could hold your hand in front of your face 2 inches. You wouldn't see it. So that was one thing that like kind of freaked me out a little bit, but it turned out the energy in this place was awesome. There were some comedians in there. I mean, it was really hard for me to edit because there was so much activity. I was just thinking, okay, because the film has four theaters in it. I mean, the whole movie can't be about one theater, but I mean, it very well could have been because we had so much. And actually coming up, kind of switch gears for a quick second. In the docuseries we have that's streaming right now, we're going to have a couple of episodes at the end of stuff that we've missed from the movies and stuff that we missed from the season. And I'm actually going to put some stuff from the Pabst Theater in that as well. So people will still get to eventually see some of the stuff that was cut, but it's just tons of activity. It really liked the women though, a lot.
What do you think, or who do you think the identities are of some of the spirits that are haunting the Pabst Theater?
That's a really good question. I know in one case of one of the theaters, which I won't say which one it is, but it's not the Pabst Theater, but it's one of the four that we filmed at. 100% we know who it is because we got the name, but we're not allowed to say the person's name because that family still lives in the community and it upsets them. Okay. But there was a very famous usher who worked at one of the four, and The reason we know is we asked the person what their name was, and they told us full name. So I think, you know, it's just, we had, Todd and I have had this discussion where, you know, if you are energy when you pass, and, you know, you leave your physical form, and, you know, known as dying, obviously, and you have a choice to go wherever you want to go to make you happy, where would it be? And, you know, we had talked about, you know, like a cabin on a beach or stuff like that. And for these people, I think the theater made them really happy. So that's where they get to spend their eternity if that's where their energy is. I mean, that's my take on it. What do you think, Todd?
I think so. I think that my theory is a little bit different. I think that when you die, your energy doesn't stay or go to one location. I think you can be everywhere at any time. And I think your energy probably goes to many places. It could be the places you loved in life. It may be a theater. Maybe it was a house that you enjoyed living in. And maybe your energy also goes to places where bad stuff may have happened in your life as well. So my theory is a little bit different than that. I think you can be in many places at one time. But I think, yeah, I mean, any energy that we encounter at any investigation, if it's residual or if it's intelligent, I think it's because that place played a very strong role in the life of that individual, whether it be good or bad.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Michael Brown and Todd Deering about haunted theaters in Wisconsin. In part two of our interview, what shocking paranormal experience was caught on camera at the haunted Grand Opera House in Oshkosh, Wisconsin? Are there any tactics used to make spirits feel comfortable to show themselves on an investigation that work better than others? Are there any surefire ways to shut a haunt investigation down? What spirits reside at the Barrymore Theater in Madison, Wisconsin? What kind of equipment is best to use to get clear, audible responses to questions? That and more in part two of our interview with Michael Brown and Todd Deering about Wisconsin's haunted theaters. To hear it, become a gravekeeper, sign up on our website, patreon.com/thegravetalks. $5 a month gets you access to all of our bonus material and advanced episodes released months before they go out to the public. You get all that and more by signing up at patreon.com/thegravetalks. That's what keeps us on the air. Please help support this program. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, Lady Luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.